This is a podcast from BBC Radio's news and sports station,
5Live.
To find out more about 5Live and its sister service, 5Live Sports Extra, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5Live. James King, good afternoon.
Hi, Simon, how are you?
I saw you on Breakfast TV this week, looking very good, about 7:15, something like that.
Thank you very much.
Bond.
Yeah, I was on just before June Whitfield and Frenchie from Greece.
It doesn't get better than that.
But no, strangely, it really doesn't, actually. Talking about James Bond, out next week.
Can you tease us with your thoughts?
I can, I think that's allowed. There was sort of an embargo, but then everyone broke it anyway, so I'll just do the same thing. Daniel Craig, I mean, that's really the thing that everyone is going to be focusing on. Is he any good? Is he going to be a great new Bond for the future? I think he is, actually. I think he's better than the film. The film has some great things in it, some great stunts, some great moments. And if anybody has read the book of Casino Royale, there's one particular torture scene that everyone has talked about and wants to know if it's included in the film. It is. I can't tell you much about it, but it's very painful to watch, especially if you're a guy. So there's some good scenes in it. There's also some cliched stuff, the sort of corny stuff that you get from Bond movies, but it's definitely tougher, and that is because of Daniel Craig. He looks tougher, he acts tougher, he is just a really tough, mean guy in this. He might not be as warm as the other ones, and that perhaps could be a stumbling block for some people, because he's not that lovable. And again, people who've read the books will say, well, James Bond wasn't. He was a tough person. Daniel Craig really gets that, but he doesn't have the sort of family-friendly appeal that perhaps Pierce Brosnan or Roger Moore had.
We'll get some thoughts on new releases in just a moment. First of all, let's do the box office top 10 this week. Number 10 is Little Children.
Which is a bit disappointing to see it only going to number 10, actually, because I think this is really good. Kate Winslet giving, I think, an Oscar-nominated performance. I'm sure she'll get something for this, this role.
Sorry, The History Boys at 9.
Which is okay.
66 at 8.
Which is quite cute. I mean, if it turned up on telly on BBC Two one Sunday night, you'd think, oh yeah, it's a good little TV movie. Quite why it's been released at the cinema, I don't know, but it's okay.
Barnyard at number 7.
Rubbish.
Open Sea is far, far pithier. I'm sorry, I'm used to like an entire essay.
I'm sure Mark's done the whole thing about male cows with udders,
yes,
hasn't he?
Yes, yeah, so. Long, long correspondence on that. Open Season at number 6.
Another animation. We're not allowed to call them cartoons anymore. It's better than Barnyard, but that's not saying much.
The Devil Wears Prada at 5.
Oh, I love it. Love it. I think this is a brilliant film.
You're just sort of slightly trashier, would you say, than Mark?
In terms of what I like?
Yeah.
Well, I certainly...
you have a higher trash threshold.
Yeah, and I enjoy the sort of the rom-coms, the chick flicks, more than Mark does. I mean, you know, he's infinitely more into horror films than I am, but I enjoy things like The Devil Wears Prada perhaps a little bit more than he does.
The Departed at number 4.
Fantastic film.
Explain.
Martin Scorsese back doing what he does best. He may not be in New York and talking about the mafia, but he's, you know, doing gangsters in Boston, and just brilliantly, poetically done by him. And great performances from Jack Nicholson especially, but also Matt Damon and Leonardo DiCaprio. It's a really powerful movie.
Step Up at 3.
Which is, you know, it's like a cross between Dirty Dancing and Saturday Night Fever and Save the Last Dance and every dance movie you've ever seen. Every cliche is in there. You could sit there and tick, you know, the list of it as you're watching it, but actually it's pretty well done for what it is.
Saw 3 at 2.
Not as good as the other two, but it's still gruesome enough to warrant people going to see it.
And at number 1, Borat, Cultural Learnings of America for Make Benefit Glorious Nation of Kazakhstan. Many people,
yeah.
I mean, large numbers of people saying, Mark wrongly slagged off the funniest film ever.
It's a hot potato, isn't it?
Is James prepared to redress the balance?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's hilarious. And I think the bits which are meant to be making a point and the bits which are meant to be just stupidly silly are very clear. And, you know, the point that it's making and the people it's really having a go at are the real life people in America, when Borat goes to America, who are the sort of the rednecks and the bigots that he comes across and encounters and interviews, and they come across as horrible people. And I think that's who it's meant to be offending deliberately. I think all the stuff about specifically in Kazakhstan, but I mean he talks about lots of different races and religions, it's so stupidly overdone, it's so over the top, it's so incredibly offensive that it becomes just silly rather than actually anything to be taken seriously. And you know, you watch Monty Python or something, they take the mick out of lots of different people, but because it's so silly you can't be offended by it because you don't think they're being racist. It's not like if it was a Bernard Manning joke or something.
Yeah, sure, they're being clever. I mean, I haven't seen it. Mark's point was he may well argue, if he was here, and he's probably listening, and he'll probably call in just a moment from wherever he is, that Python were being clever with each other. They had written a script and they followed it. What Borat is doing is being clever with other people, members of the public, who don't really know any better.
But, absolutely. No, I totally agree with him. But I think some of the opinions that those people have, the American people that he does encounter on his road trip across America, I think the things that they say and the beliefs that they have, Borat has every right to show them up, and they have every right to be humiliated.
So Mark was the only one not laughing, and you were joining in with that lumpen majority.
Yeah, no, I thought it was hilarious. And I think, Sacha Baron Cohen is an intelligent guy, and he's very mysterious. We don't know a lot about him. But what we do know is that, well, for starters, it's very well publicised that he is Jewish, but it's also reasonably well known about that he's done a lot of research into racism when he was a student and written papers on it. And actually, I do think he is trying to do something more subtle than the obvious gags in Borat would suggest.
Okay, that's the top 10. You can go see one of those or try something new.
Well, we'll start off with Breaking and Entering, which is a really difficult movie to sum up. And that's actually works to its advantage and to its disadvantage. I'll start off telling you about Juliette Binoche, who stars in this. She plays a character called Amira, who's a single mum, refugee from the former Yugoslavia. And she lives in this high-rise flat in King's Cross in London, and she has a very important line in the film where she says, "No story from Sarajevo is simple," and that's absolutely right with Breaking and Entering, because it's a very complicated plot. But essentially, Amira finds out that her teenage son called Miro is hanging out with some dodgy guys, some dodgy relatives, and is breaking into offices at night and stealing computers. One of the offices he breaks into belongs to Jude Law. Jude Law tracks down Miro and meets up with his mum, meets up with Juliette Binoche, and falls in love with her and starts having an affair with the mother of this guy who stole his computers from his office. We then learn about lots of other different characters. We learn about Jude Law's girlfriends, played by Robin Wright Penn. They have a bit of a fractured relationship. They have a daughter with autism. Jude Law's partner at the office. They're both architects, played by Martin Freeman. We learn about his life. We learn about lots of different characters from all over the shop. And the problem with it is that it is a bit of a scattergun approach. It does need a bit more focus, but it does make some really interesting points. I'll tell you what those are after a clip from Breaking and Entering.
Are you concerned about B?
Sure, but Liv worries so much, there's not much room for, but a 13-year-old girl who collects batteries, doesn't sleep, doesn't let us sleep, won't eat anything, spends all day wanting to do somersaults. I mean, yeah, sure, I'm concerned. Of course I'm concerned.
Liv says that you're wrapped up in your work.
Wrapped up?
That's fair.
I love how working hard, working really hard, becomes wrapped up, becomes something selfish. I love that.
When you say that you love it, do you mean that you don't love it?
Let's just back up. We love B. It's not a competition to see who loves her the most. If it were a competition, I would happily let Liv win. You win.
The very familiar voice of Jude Law. Some of the things that it talks about, because it is a movie that has lots of different subjects and lots of different themes and lots of different characters. Well, for starters, it talks about immigration. There's a lot in this movie about London of 2006 and how people from different cultures can work together or not work together, as the case may be. It's also about the morality of stealing. Jude Law is a victim of crime, but what does that do to his life? Does he actually become a better person? Does he reevaluate his life because of what he's lost from it? There's also stuff about voyeurism in there. There's loads of things going on, and that is very impressive. You have to be impressed with a movie directed by Anthony Minghella, who's a great director, that aims so high, because this really does aim very high, and it says, look, it's serious, it is intelligent, it's a moody adult thriller, and that's good. But also, when you aim so high, of course, when you do fall, you're going to fall even harder. And certainly by the third act, the last half an hour, 45 minutes of this movie, it is starting to lose its way. And you do cry out for actually a bit of focus and actually, just to know exactly what this is trying to say, because it does wander off a little bit. And ultimately, I've been thinking about this movie for a while, and you think it is very intelligent. You do stroke your chin when you're watching it, and you do debate the ideas with your friends after you've seen it. But ultimately, do I really care that much about it? And Anthony Minghella has had these criticisms levelled at him before. He's done The English Patient and Cold Mountain. He makes beautiful films and very intelligent films and very moody films. But do you really care and love the people in those films? And even The English Patient, his most successful movie, a lot of people criticised it for being cold and being a bit being a bit too robotic.
And these characters are cold?
And I think it's exactly the thing you can level at this movie, is that he is a master, a craftsman, Anthony Minghella, as a director, in the same way that Jude Law, I think, is a great actor who thinks about what he's doing. But do you really love these people? Do you really warm to these people? Which ultimately is a very basic thing, but the basic reason why you like a movie. And I don't think you do.
So we've done the Anthony Minghella, which... maybe a contender for movie of the week. Let's just see what else is around, James.
Well, I think the next film is Starter for 10, and here's the real difference between a movie like Breaking and Entering, which you can admire, but actually, if truth be told, find a little bit boring in parts, and a film which doesn't have that kind of craftsmanship in terms of direction, but has the characters which actually you just really like and really love. Starter for 10 stars James McAvoy. He was in Chronicles of Narnia. He was in the TV show Shameless. He was actually the BAFTA award winner for, I think, Best Newcomer at the BAFTA Awards this year. He really is a hot talent, and I mean, I've been saying he's the new Ewan McGregor, something he'd probably hate to hear, but I think he has that kind of profile in the future. And this is set in the mid-80s, this movie. Great 80s soundtrack in this as well. And he plays this geeky teenager from Essex who bucks the trend of his family and actually goes to university, goes to Bristol University. He's got a bit of a chip on his shoulder. He's not as posh as the other students there, a bit naive. And to try and prove himself at university, he joins the University Challenge team. Now, as you'll hear in this clip, the auditions for the University Challenge team don't go too well. It's a Starter for 10.
Subject?
English literature. But I'm pretty good on sciences.
Newton's third law of motion.
Reaction is equal and opposite to action.
Take a seat, please. Right, let's get started then, shall we? Sorry there aren't more of us. It seems that vandals have been tearing down the posters. I'm Patrick Watts from Ashton-under-Lyme. I'm reading mechanical engineering. Some of you may recognize me from last year's TV tournament. Once again, I'll be captaining this year's team.
Why?
Sorry?
If we lost last year, why are you still captain?
Well, because I'm a postgrad and I've been captain for the last 3 years.
Yeah, we've lost for the last 3 years.
Look, let's just crack on, shall we? In order to qualify, you'll need to answer 30 questions in 30 minutes, and the top three scores join me, the captain, in this year's team. I have some lively little questions in there, so I think you're in for a pretty good time. But it is against the clock, so people, if you're ready, let's quiz.
Do you ever try and go on University Challenge?
No. I mean, I have told this story before, but...
I haven't heard it.
No, sorry. Warwick University were banned.
Really? Because I went to Warwick as well. But obviously, by that point, we'd been allowed back.
No, we were banned when I was there because the previous year, the rugby team entered themselves. And you know how they split the screen?
Yeah.
And the Warwick team had been put on the top. Yeah. But of course, they're not. They're just next to each other. And they took things and dropped them off the front of their desk, and then of course they just disappeared halfway through, and this was considered inappropriate behaviour, and so were banned henceforth.
And you had to pay the price, even though you had nothing to do with those kind of hijinks.
Frankly, I wouldn't have got on the team anyway, but I just used that as an excuse. We were banned.
So this is a film about, you know, this guy trying to get on University Challenge. That's the main part of the plot, but also it's about him falling for two different women when he's at university. One who's this real sort of 1980s right-on campaigner. One who's completely opposite, who's just a real blonde bombshell. And the mess he gets into with these two women, the mess he gets into when he goes on television, the mess he makes of trying to balance his old life in Southend with his new life at Bristol. And it's very funny. I think that James McAvoy I saw this again the other day, and he's a great performance, a really subtle performance at being someone geeky. It's very warm, it's very touching, very affectionate look at an era at University Challenge, which is a bit of a national institution. I think there's actually a show on telly tonight which is sort of a history of University Challenge. This is the Bamber Gascoigne years, though, as opposed to the Jeremy Paxman years. And even though it's a small film and a low-budget British film, and, you know, you think, well, it could have ended up on the telly, really, I think it has the charm, and the charm is the key word here, to make it onto the big screen, and it's the performances and the sweetness that actually makes it something more than just another TV movie. Certainly if you want a bit of 80s nostalgia and a bit of a nostalgia chip about going to university and, you know, eating baked beans on toast every day, then it has all of that as well.
Well, the book, which we did on our books panel a couple of years ago, anyone who had any kind of education through the late 70s through the 80s is just going to lap up every single minute of it.
Absolutely. And, you know, even though it is very much of its era and it talks about Thatcher and it talks about the politics of the time, actually, even if you're a student now, you'd still appreciate it, because really the politics may have changed, but the issues you face as a student are still pretty much the same. Now, if you love monster movies, if you love sort of old Godzilla movies, not the recent remake, but the old original Japanese ones and horror films, you need to see this one. This is a South Korean movie, and it is completely inspired by the old Godzilla films. And it's about a monster that's created from pollution. All this kind of environmental rubbish is dumped into this river in South Korea, and over the years, this monster is created and comes out of the river, goes on a killing spree, big kind of lizard, horrible thing. Very clever, this film, because although it has utterly the Godzilla references, and, you know, if you've ever seen those, they're quite laughably done. The production values of them, it is just some bloke in a big lizard suit. Although it has all the nods to them and is deliberately naff in parts, it also actually has quite a lot to say. You know, amongst the cheesiness, it has comments about environmental pollution. It has comments about the American influence in South Korea. It's about a family trying to rescue their daughter from this monster that's kidnapped it. So it's a lot about a broken family trying to keep things together. So it is very entertaining, because on the one hand, you can laugh at it and laugh at the naffness of it all, the deliberate naffness of it all. And then the next minute, it's making actually quite an intelligent political point. So it's a very good balance. I mean, actually, those old Godzilla movies had a lot more to say than people ever gave them credit for. So it's not clearly not a mainstream movie. But if you like those old films, then this is a modern reworking of it.
And I think it's
done really well.
James?
I think this is probably a 15 certificate. It's not actually that scary. It's actually more funny than scary. But it has a lot to say as well. So I was quite impressed by the host.
What else
but
is that?
Film of the week, actually, is this film, The Prestige. You know why it's called The Prestige? Did Andy Serkis talk about this?
I think that was an incisive question I didn't quite get to.
Well, the Prestige is actually the third part of a magic trick. Magic trick's composed of three parts. You get the pledge, which is the setup. Say you're sawing a woman in half. The pledge is saying, right, take a look at this box. It's empty. You can see everybody in the audience, that there's no gadgets or gizmos in there. Then you have the second part, which is the turn, which is actually the physical act of sawing the woman in half. Then the prestige is the third part. It's the big twist. It's the big surprise at the end, which presumably would be when you split the box open and show the two halves of the woman.
Yeah, exactly. That one.
So the movie actually follows those three stages itself. It's about two rival magicians in the 19th century. You've got Christian Bale and Hugh Jackman. Christian Bale is the actual magical genius, but very intense, not so much of a showman, whereas Hugh Jackman is the other way around. He's not so great at magic, but he's a great performer, a great showman on the stage. So utter rivals, both trying to be the best magician in town, in London, at one particular trick, a trick called the Transported Man, a vanishing act. And it's a beautiful recreation of the era. Christopher Nolan, who directed Christian Bale in Batman, is directing this. And it's about the science of the time. It's about the inventions of the time. All of these things that magicians are using to try and perfect their performances. And lots of twists and lots of turns. And like any good magic trick, lots of it you're watching going, I don't understand what's going on. How did they do that? Let's take a listen to The Prestige. This is a voice you probably will recognise.
Did they applaud when you saw it?
The trick was too good. It was too simple. The audience hardly had time to see it.
He's a dreadful magician.
No, he's a wonderful magician. He's a dreadful showman. He doesn't know how to dress it up, how to sell the
trick. How does he do it?
He uses a double.
No. It's too simple. This is a complex illusion.
You only say that because you don't know the method. It's a double that comes out at the end. It's the only way.
I've seen him perform the trick three times now, Mr. Carter. The prestige is the same man.
No, it's not.
The same man comes out of that second cabinet, I promise you.
It's the same man. He wears padded gloves to hide his damaged fingers, but if you look closely, you can tell.
He doesn't know how to sell his trick to an audience, but I do.
Yeah, well, we can use it as a climax of the show.
Yes. The man stole my life. I'm going to steal his trick.
Hugh Jackman, you heard in there. Scarlett Johansson, you heard in there. But also Sir Michael Caine, very familiar voice. He's sort of the advisor to Hugh Jackman. So it is about this obsessive rivalry between two obsessive people. Who can be the best person? Who can be the most famous magician? But crucially, like a magic trick, as I said, it keeps you guessing. There's lots of sleight of hand. There's lots of double crossing. There's twists and turns. And it's really intelligently done and really cleverly done. And it combines brains with entertainment. And this is what Christopher Nolan is great at. This is why people liked his new version of Batman Begins, because obviously it was a big summer blockbuster, and it had the entertainment factor, but also it did have some depth and some psychology to it as well. And you really get that again in The Prestige. He's a dark director, Christopher Nolan, but by sort of balancing the darkness of Christian Bale with the lightness of Hugh Jackman, who's a real showman in real life, you know, this is what he's like, he's a real mainstream A-list star. By getting that balance right, you actually get a movie that's a real blend of sort of cult movie with just big mainstream thrills as well.
And do you get a movie in which you could say, look at that guy, David Bowie, he's a really good actor? Because I was just pressing Andy Serkis on it a couple of days ago, yeah. And he said words to the something like, he's really great in the part, it's entirely right that he should be doing this part, which is not quite answering the question.
David Bowie plays a mystical, actually a real-life character, but a mystical Serbian inventor who Hugh Jackman goes to because he might be able to create some technology for him to perfect his magic trick. He's not in it there very much. You know, if I was casting a mysterious Victorian-era Serbian inventor, David Bowie wouldn't be the first name on my list. He's David Bowie in it, so
well, that's the point I wanted to write. So yet again, he plays the role of David Bowie.
99% of the acting in this movie is utterly brilliant. David Bowie is David Bowie.
Movie of the week, then?
The Prestige.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.